It was after this party, at which I was getting completely written off, of course. One of my mates called my brother to come and pick me up. And I was not ready to leave.
No one likes getting kicked out of a party early.
My poor brother always had to put up with me. No matter what trouble I got myself into, he'd always bail me out.
Sounds like a good guy.
Yeah. But he would also judge me for it. Not that I blame him now.
It is funny how we're always harder on the people that we love.
I definitely was. We fought on the car ride home. I said some really horrible things. Got nasty. And then I had the bright idea of trying to open the car door while we were still moving. He took his eyes off the road for 1 second, and the next thing I knew, we were upside down. I was stuck, and I kept calling out to him, but he wouldn't wake up. He was pronounced dead at the scene. There was nothing anyone could do.
I'm so sorry.
My parents never forgave me. They still won't talk to me even now.
You can't blame yourself, though. Hey, you didn't mean for anything bad to happen.
When I got to the clinic, they told me over and over again that I just need to forgive myself. I get it. But my brother is still gone. And I still tore my entire family apart in one night.
We are Si and Sophie. This is Coastal News, a home and away podcast, your weekly episode companion podcast for your favourite Aussie soap.
Right, indigo violet colour that the sky goes at night. Favourite colour?
It's a very pretty colour. It's not my favourite colour, but yeah, it's very specific, isn't it?
It is. If someone asks you for your favourite colour, you tend to come out with a primary, don't you? Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. What are the rainbow big hitters you normally go with, don't you? You know. But, yeah. Not Levi.
No. That weird indigo colour the sky goes. What?
You mean purpley blue, blurple, or whatever the people call it. Yeah.
That it's just a macho man not wanting to say his favourite colour's purple, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Suspicious. How are you? You okay?
I'm good, yeah, thank you. How are you doing?
We've pinned you down.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I've been gallivanting. I'm sorry. I've been on tour.
Literally. Yeah.
I've been to Birmingham and London this week, and I'm off to Manchester and Liverpool this weekend. So, yeah, I'm on tour. It's good fun.
On tour, yeah. Seeing all the sights.
Yeah, well, not so much. Just a lot of bars and gigs. Yeah. I'm trying. How are you?
I'm okay. Not half as exciting as you are this week.
Aww.
And I've been talking to the wall with all my home and away theories.
I know. I'm sorry. I've not been around. I'm sorry. I do feel very guilty.
Give over. What a mess.
But then I am reminding myself that you're buggering off to Spain soon. So I'm like, well,
yeah,
you know.
I do it enough to you. Yeah. But yeah, no. Well, do you know what? It just means we've stored it all up for pod. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah. Oh God, better watch out then, guys.
Normally, I sort of know where you're going to come at me with. You know, what angle you're going to arrive at? But I don't this week.
No, I've been watching it all on the train at like 2 a.m. So catching up.
Oh gosh, right. We'll see how much you can remember.
Yes, remind me.
Just a very quick one, I must remind people as well, you know, I mean, we've had a couple of entries this week, you know, in the whole Coastal News Klaxon thing. We had a bit of Coastal News business going on last week.
Yes.
And yeah, don't forget, if you get in touch with us on any of our socials at Coastal News Pod, or email us if you're not on the socials, coastalnewspod@gmail.com, and just let us know when, what episode you heard the Coastal News mentioned on. You could be in with a chance of winning some merch. And a couple of you remembered this, so we'll have to do a draw soon, won't we? So keep your eyes and ears peeled, people, if you want to be in with the chance of winning anything, because that is an ongoing thing that we did commit to.
I think
Rishi's committing to reducing the small boat crossings. That's the kind of commitment we've ended up stuck in here.
Oh God!
I'm not liking our woes to a migrant crisis, but you know, we've made a promise. We're going to have to see it through. So yeah, yes, get in touch and to be with a chance, because we're going to be doing a draw soon. Right. Well, thoughts on Home and Away this week, Sophie?
I've enjoyed it. I have enjoyed it. It's got a little bit steamy in places. I have enjoyed seeing Rue being hilarious, because, you know, I'm not a big fan of her generally. And she's actually been quite good this week. I've enjoyed her. So, yeah.
She's had some funny lines, actually.
She has, yeah.
She just needs a bit more of that. You know,
we've
a lot about sort of the way Rue's written and things. And yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Because I'm dying to find out, because you chop and change your opinion. I'm dying to find out what you think about Marley this week.
Well, you'll find out. I was watching it and with your voice ringing in the back of my mind.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
You know, because I was sitting there one night, so you're thinking, oh, yeah, she's got a bit of a point here. I'm just a fickle, I think. But yeah, I'll go into detail shortly.
good. I've been waiting. I was watching a couple of episodes and I was like, I can't wait to hear what he says. He's going to be like, I don't like him this week.
I know, yeah, it's coming. Don't worry. Oh, dear. I change more than the weather. Right. Do you want your headlines then? Shall we crack on with it?
I do.
Mac and Levi realise they definitely do not have each other out of their systems. Rue hires PI Cash to get to the bottom of the Surf Club donation mystery. Justin goes borderline stalker mode as he tries to reconnect with Leah. And Valerie opens up about her past and how she came to be at the clinic.
Please take the time to like, subscribe, and review Coastal News wherever you source your podcasts, and ensure you never miss an episode.
Right, Monday night. Well, let's go with it, since we're talking about it. Mac and Marley are having this conversation. It's all about Levi asking Mac for an affair. and Marley doesn't respond in the protective housemate and your brother soulmate way he has been doing. He sort of has this apathetic response, I thought, and was just like, oh, okay, well, I don't judge you. And she's all having this, I don't know what she thought she'd get from him. I was watching it thinking she wants something from him, doesn't she? And he's just sort of like, well, you know, I'm not going to judge you. And then she's all flailing, I can't be the other woman, but I want to be. You know, sort of thing. Yeah. And he wasn't giving her anything, really. And I'm like, come on, Marley. These cojones we talk about a lot, they seem to find him and lose him, you know, quite often.
Yeah.
And he's all like, oh, at least just stay true to your principles. And I'm thinking, right, lol.
No.
Yeah. Little does Marley know, she put out right away. Look, I mean, that's a bit of a flippant comment, but...
Well, she instigated it as well. So she was the one that was like, we just need to get each other out of our system or whatever. Like, so it wasn't like she kind of went along with it or was like coerced into it. She was like, yeah, let's just do it.
She drove up to the blooming motel. Do you know what I mean?
She did, yeah. And you only go there to hide for being a murderer or to have sex, don't you? Let's face it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what else is the motel for, right?
Exactly. That's the clientele.
We're bashing someone's hand.
Well, yes, but
that was added.
That was off the violent, steamy affairs. It was all correlated. It's all correlated to murder and affairs.
Well, Marley tells her anyway, just get on with it. Like, stop beating yourself up, get on with it, get out of the house, takes her for a walk. And then he runs into Rose, and there were signs of this last week, wasn't there, of Rose getting a little bit narky about him spending so much time with Mac. And this is where my frustrations start coming in with Marley, because he's not realising. Look, we've not made no secret. We're not the biggest fans of Rose and Marley, right? No. We don't get it. We don't personally agree with it. So I'm not that bothered that this is happening. In fact, bring it on, right? But it's the way it's happening. She is clearly unhappy about it. He's clearly being neglectful. She's stressing about this new position. And although he has a couple of conversations with her and sort of talks her down a bit, doesn't he, and makes him sound a bit more doting and supportive, she is clearly crying out, saying, look, I need you with me, not with Mac all the time. And Mac's a big girl, and she's clearly well enough to be gallivanting into motel rooms all of a piece. Like, give the girl some space and look after your own backyard.
Yeah.
I'm saying, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's difficult because Rose obviously doesn't know what's going on, and she's just seeing it at surface level. So she's seeing Max looking better. She thinks it's about Max's health, doesn't she? She thinks it's about the heart attacks. She doesn't realise it's actually emotional, and it is about her heart, but it's not about the you know, the health of her heart. It's about the fact that she's falling for this guy. So it doesn't help that she doesn't know that. And she doesn't really understand why Marley's like being a shoulder for her to cry on, because Mac looks absolutely fine and she's assuming it's, you know, health when it's not. But I'm just not enjoying this, watching this. It's making me cringe because Marley, I don't know whether it's, is it still the police thing? Because obviously she's had this promotion. She's now, you know, she's got Cash's job, hasn't she, essentially?
Yeah.
And she's, the reason why she's stressing out is because work's, you know, she's had this promotion, she's been thrown in at the deep end, she's got all this stuff to do, she doesn't really know how to do the job yet, and she's trying to like balance it all out. Then she's got Rue pecking her head at the same time, so she's just getting really stressed out, and all she wants is to vent at Marley and say, I'm having a really shitty time at work and I just want someone to, I don't know, give me a bit of attention or give me a hug or make, you know, listen to me.
It's not unreasonable. She turns to a partner for that, is it?
Yeah. It's not unreasonable at all. And he's just, I don't know whether it's still a subconscious thing about her being a police officer, and obviously the big drama that when he found out initially that she was a police officer, and you know, my family don't like the police because of my brother and all that sort of stuff. Is it still like that deep-seated hatred of the police, and actually he doesn't really support her job and her career and her choices, and therefore he doesn't really care that she's having a shit time at work because she's a cop? I don't know. I don't really understand.
I've not considered that. That's just given me a whole other thing to think about.
It's weird, isn't it? Because like he's acting like a boyfriend to Mac at the moment. You know, he's being really supportive. Oh, can I kind of cook you dinner, put your feet up, you know, let me take care of you. And then to Rose, he's going, oh, Rose is all right. She's just stressed at work. She'll be fine. Yeah. She'll live.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
I would argue as well that he is doing that with Mac, not because of her heart attack recovery, but because she's entrapped in this whole, unraveled in this whole, I should say, affair thing.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit too close to that. Like, it's none of his business. Yeah. And he's there glaring. I think he's sticking around more because he's trying to stop her doing that. But, like, that's not his place.
Okay. I didn't see it that way. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? He's trying to be, like, he's playing devil's advocate a bit, isn't he? Because he's not telling her what to do, what she should do. But he's like, you know, maybe you shouldn't be doing this. Maybe, you know, have a think about this.
And he's staring at her at Salt when he's there. And then, you know, when the reaction at the house, you know, when she says, I slept with him. And I don't know. I mean, later in the week, obviously, and we'll come on to it, but Levi's back in town because he's been called to help out. What's his name? Remy. He's been called to help out Remy because Remy's out of the hospital, which we'll come on to in a moment. But so Levi's back in town. Marley sees this and he's like, oh, for God's sake. You know, do you know what I mean? To me, he's focusing on that stuff and getting involved in a personal life.
Yeah.
It's, and less so on the sort of, are you physically okay?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And there was that really weird conversation on the beach. So obviously Marley and Rose were having a bit of a to-do, you know, and he was saying, oh, well, you're always at work and you're always moaning about work. And she was like, oh, you're always with Mac and you never give me any attention. And then Mac comes over and he did this really weird thing. And I was just like, oh, major red flag. He kept saying, oh, yeah, I'll take you home. That's okay, isn't it, Rose? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I don't like this. Mm-hmm.
Nope.
What is his game? I don't really get him.
Yeah.
Like, is he a horrible person or not? Because he's being lovely to Mac. He's being vile to Rose. And Rose is his girlfriend. I don't get it.
No, I don't. And I saw all the same flags you have. So, yeah. I was you were there in my mind. Tell it off.
It was just the way he was saying it. The way he was, like, delivering the lines. He was like, oh, yeah, I'll help you out, Mac. That's okay. Isn't it, Rose? And I was just like, you're a dick. Like, stop. Yeah. No, yeah. You know she's not comfortable. You know that she's just told you she's struggling at work and she just wants her boyfriend. I don't think that's unreasonable. Oh, no, I'm not into him this week at all.
Nope.
But I don't understand. Are we supposed to think he's horrible or not? Because he's not being horrible with Mac, but he is being horrible with Rose. So I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about him.
Yeah, I can't read it. I really can't read it.
No.
Let's see if he turns on Mac. When her behaviour and what she's up to sort of comes to light. Let's see, let's just hold judgment for now, because I suspect he'll turn, because he seems to be a man with quite sort of black and white morals. Like, he's got a moral compass and he's got his vision of right and wrong, and he's not, it sounds like he's, that's leading him at the minute.
But I can imagine him doing that to Levi, because last time he gave Levi a serve, didn't he, to his face and was like, I'm going to call your superiors and tell them you're having a relationship with your patient, blah, blah, blah. I can't imagine him turning around to Mac. I think he's going to go to Levi.
Yeah.
There's something about Mac that he's very protective of her.
Is he in love with her?
I know, that's what I'm thinking. Is it something like that? Does he not want to be with Rose anymore and he's trying to cause a breakup between them? And he hasn't got the balls to do it himself, so he's doing that thing where they try and get you to dump them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything there between Mac and Marley, though, from her point of view. I don't think she's interested.
No,
so.
I don't either. And also, like, she's Dean's sister, that whole promise thing.
Yeah, and they live together. It's weird.
Yeah, it's gonna. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Levi is back later in the week in the bay because Remy was discharged from hospital, didn't use the old patient transport service. He went in the rickety van with Eden.
Over and, all the speed bumps.
She couldn't have gone any other way. And he's in a lot of pain, right?
Yeah.
Mucho pain. Isn't he? And that it was like three episodes of Remy just making noises in the background.
Oh,
he's throwing up. Yeah, he's looking great.
He looks hot.
Yeah, he's crook as rook, isn't he? And they're spending the whole week trying to get him back to the emergency room because they're really worried about him. Eden ends up phoning. He's refusing to go. He's refusing to get an ambulance. So Eden ends up phoning Levi out of sheer panic. Isn't she really? And he's then back in the bay to check on him. But before he goes to this patient who's riding around in pain, he phones his fancy piece Mac first and is like, oh, yeah, I'm back. Oh, yeah, and I missed you. And all this stupid affair stuff that you get. Mm. And you're just like, there's a guy in serious pain. Your sister's frantically phoned you, but you pulled over and rang her up. So, of course, we're like, all right, great. Mac's drooling again. You're like, well, That goodbye, hello, goodbye sex didn't work, did it? Do you know what I mean?
No,
it's just actually had the opposite effect. Mm. After he's then eventually seen to Remy, and there's actually nothing wrong with him, so it was all a load of pain noises for nothing, really, for three episodes. Turns out there's nothing wrong. Go back to bed.
He just wanted a feed. Some
pills. Have a sandwich with your pills. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I thought, blimey, there's nothing wrong with him. I've just spent 3 days watching this.
I know. You've been taking him on an empty stomach. Yeah. Well, you need to eat, mate. You need to eat with your tablets. Was that it? Seriously?
Yeah.
Just okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be in band rehearsal next week. Watch this space. I did like it when Felicity told him to take a deep breath. You got deep breaths aren't my thing at the moment. I was like, just had his chest bust open. So Levi then, he's obviously agreed to nip down to Salt to see Mac because he can't bear not to. And Eden sort of invited herself, third wheel in it, which doesn't go down too well. But that moment where, you know, they get to Salt and Mac sees him and he goes to get the menus and there's all this chemistry and tension between them and, you know, smelling each other's perfume or whatever is going on. Like, you're just thinking, well, obviously, we're getting a take two here, aren't we?
Yeah,
I mean?
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh, no. And I'm torn here because I'm like, oh, this is hot and I'm into it. And then I'm like, oh, this is wrong and I shouldn't be. And I don't want to like it because I'm supposed to be like, you know, I know myself as a viewer who's supposed to be the good guy and the good guy and the bad guy. He can't be a good guy, can he, if he's able to do this and he's quote unquote happily married. You know, so what am I meant to feel here? I'm so confused. Anyway, he spends the whole night with Eden because she's there, and afterwards he's looking for her, looks a bit frustrated, he can't find her. Oh no, where is she, Sophie? She's outside sprawled on the bonnet of his car. Not quite, but that's how I pictured it.
It was pretty much like a centerfold of the 90s. It was, wow. Yeah. Not subtle, Mac.
No. Very quick. Again, she's instigated it. They're very quickly back at the motel, sleeping with each other. What are we supposed to think here?
I don't know. It's so confusing. I mean, like you, I'm loving it because I'm like, yeah, this is really hot. And, you know, who doesn't love the Stevie affair with two attractive people on a soap? But then it's like, it's cringing as well, because obviously they start kissing in the motel and his phone's ringing. He goes, oh, I need to check it's not the hospital. Sees it's Imogen calling and he goes, oh, it's not the hospital. Let's carry on. So I was like, oh.
Yeah, oh, God.
I don't know how I feel. Because I thought at that point it might make them stop. I thought they might go, oh, no, we can't do this. Or at least have the conversation about it before they carried on. But he literally went, no, it's not the hospital. And then chucked her on the bed. I was like, I want to like this. I don't know whether I do.
Her hairs are up on the back of my neck.
I know. And she's like, got her legs wrapped around him with her heels still on. I was like, oh my God. Like, I just don't, I should be loving this, but I'm not. I'm just like, I'm conflicted.
Yeah. And also, we know nothing still. Another week down, we know nothing about Imogen. Yeah. We only have his word. I mean, do you know when I said to you when all this kicked off and I said, I bet he's a dog, I bet he's doing this loads. I've now changed my mind on that. I don't think he's very good at this. Because he's making all these mistakes. You know, for me, it gets even worse the next morning. She's like staring at him sleeping. I'm like, oh, give me a break. Full face on.
she got up an hour before I went to the loo and fixed her face, definitely. We've all been there, ladies. We've all been there.
And then you know, and it's, let's get to know each other. And I must say, I do like a long black in me and not a flat white. Flat white in the morning.
Pardon me. Oh dear. Is this coffee? Because I don't do coffee, so I don't understand coffee talk. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Coffee.
Okay.
And they get to talk about favourite colours, you know, that's where the indigo, whatever comes from. And he accidentally mentions her name and then my toes are curling and she's like, oh, doesn't matter, carry on. And then when Eden knocks on the door and then she's stashed in the bathroom, I'm thinking, what the hell has this come to? It's just the pipes.
The pipes, the noisy pipes that sound like a toothpaste falling in the sink.
Nope, I couldn't watch. I had my hands over my face and I was watching through my fingers.
Oh no. Yeah, it was cringe, mega cringe. I don't know. Where do we go from here? Like this, because she was like, oh, no regrets. And he was like, oh, no regrets. And I was like, oh, some regrets, surely. Come on.
He doesn't seem to have a problem with it, but he makes all these mistakes, which is why I'm saying I don't think he's done this a lot, actually. I do believe him now. He says, you know, this isn't something he's used to. And he snaps, doesn't he, when, you know, Eden can't find out. So like, and he tries to say it's because, you know, of the reason why he and Eden were estranged, but actually it's because, I mean, Eden's talking about going and meeting his wife, and you know, and he's going to get caught. That's what, that's the real reason, that beneath the surface, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's panicking about getting caught. He's flapping a bit. I don't think he's as cold and sort of heartless as we think.
Mm.
But yeah, Sophie, I don't know if I can watch it. I don't know.
It's not going to end well. Let's put it that way, is it? I can't see it working out. So they're both happy. I really can't. I think it's going to end really badly.
And this is a constant cycle we have with Mackenzie.
I know. Like, yeah.
Of her falling fast, she said it herself.
Mm.
And then heartbreak, falling again, and heartbreak. And it's been in different guises, but this has been a constant cycle. Like,
I don't think she understands what love is, though, because she can't be in love with him, because they don't, like, he's like, their whole conversation about what coffee do you drink and what film do you like, and oh, you grew up in a funeral parlor, you know. I love the fact that they mentioned that, by the way.
Yeah, right. I really appreciated that. Excellent. Yeah.
You grew up with dead bodies in your house. You know, I like, it's given us the on-screen time of them, of the audience being told these people don't know each other from Adam. They literally just fancy the pants off each other. This is not love. This is lust. This is sex. This is, but they're acting like they're star-crossed lovers, and it's really confusing.
Mm.
Like, I must have you. I need you. Blah blah blah. And it's like you've not even really had that much of a conversation. You've literally just gone, I want you. I don't think they know the difference between love and lust.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. We and last week we sort of said the same thing, didn't we? Mm. We said that these guys, she's trying to get him in bed. She's not trying. They're not dating.
No,
they're not. You know, when we talk about emotional affairs in the past, you know, we've talked about things like that. It's absolutely surface level, this, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's not emotional at all, because they're not having those deep conversations. Like, it looks like we might get them next week. But at the moment, they don't really know each other very well. They don't know whether they're even that compatible, really, apart from obviously in the bedroom. But in terms of emotionally, you know, life goals, where they want to be, you know, principles. I mean, obviously, his principles are looking a little bit dodgy right now, aren't they? Because he's literally cheating on his happy marriage that he keeps saying. So, I don't know. It doesn't bode well. But then he's not like a guest character, because the fact that he's Eden's brother. That's why I'm like, where's this going? Because we can't just write him out like we've written out Gabe and everybody else. Because he's, now we know he's Eden's brother. He's always going to be there. Even if he's not on screen, we know he exists somewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
It's weird.
He's not a guestie then. He's on the credits as full-on.
Well, he might be a guestie, but I mean, like, he's not just a random. He's not just walked up into town as a surgeon. He's got links to the Bay now. He knows half. He knows all of Lyric now, isn't he? Well, so
yeah, that's true.
We're never going to forget him. If she ever mentions him again, you know, if he's off screen, you know, Levi exists out there. So
that's true.
I don't understand where we're going with this, because it's not Gabe. It's not another Gabe or another Valerie, you know, another random like her. It's weird.
Yeah, you're right. There's always going to be something now, isn't there? Because he does exist. Yeah, you're right. You're right, actually. I think as well, we've got to look at this. He talks about this, and he sided with his dad during the fair, and that's why he was explaining his snappiness. But
yeah,
I think we can apply the same to Mac personally. I think the reason she ends up putting herself through this is because she had a dad like that as well.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think we're seeing two products of that sort of upbringing collide here in slow motion. I think we are. I think that's what it is. You can't blame everything on people's parents at the end of the day. I think that's an easy trope, but I think it's got some sort of impact on their lives, and I think we're seeing it play out.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that they're both sort of echoing their own dads.
It's a coinkidink, at least.
And Mac really doesn't like her own dad, so
there we go.
Levi sided with his, but Mac didn't side with hers. So that's interesting in its own right, isn't it?
I'm expecting some sort of internal battle with Mac.
Mm, yeah.
Which it doesn't really enthuse me, to be honest.
another battle. Oh, dear. Yes, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm open-minded at the moment. I just don't see it going anywhere. But I'm also confused because, like I said, he's always going to exist because he's Eden's brother and Eden's with Cash and Cash is Flick's brother. You know, there's a whole chain of people that are linked to Levi.
Yeah, you're so right. I've not even thought about that, but now you've said it, I'm like, oh yeah, of course. Yeah, this is more than just it's more than just a short-lived couple of weeks arc.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And they never mention it again because it's. Right. Let's go to another battle. Battle of the ages. Rue and John Palmer. She's getting down to finding out who made that donation, isn't she? And Irene says, oh my God, Father, stop stressing. It'll come hell or high water. It's going to get spent. So what are you stressing about? And she's like, I need to know. I need to know because John's buying expensive walkie-talkies and it's going to get blown. And I'm like, yes, we're spending this money. Like, the club was going under without it, but now we can afford to splurge it, apparently. We're splurging it on all sorts of crap, aren't we? Dinner for the committee, what new walkie-talkies that aren't needed. Like, what the hell? Rue calls Rose and asks for help. She doesn't get it in quite a rude way because Rose is stressing out. And she ends up confronting John about it all, reminds him that it's to place the donation was to, you know, fill in a funding hole and not to be spending on his wish list, as she puts it. But in the same breath, you know, we've got Cash at a loose end here looking for work and realises through Rose's meltdown about not helping the community. And I did like him telling off of her. One of her many criticisms of her policing that, Sophie, you and I have, is that she's very lacking in the community spirit, which is not what you need in a community.
In a small town, you know, you need,
you need
that mindset. Yeah,
absolutely. And so I did enjoy his little ticking off, but it gives him an idea. So he goes and offers his services to Rue. So Rue's also then a little bit sort of you know, when she's sort of saying she's telling John off for spending, but then goes and hires a private investigator with the same money.
Oh, you mean like being a hypocrite?
Hypocrite, that's it. Why did I lose that word? Yeah.
Yeah, she is, isn't she? I mean, he basically tells her that. He's like, well, it's okay for you to spend the money on, you know, trying to find out where the donation came from. So spending money on finding out where free money's coming from. But I can't spend it on things that actually will benefit the club. It does seem a bit hypocritical. But then after last week, when you explained it to me, I was like, well, she has got a point. Because if this money is dodgy, what happens then?
Yeah,
it's due diligence, as she keeps saying, isn't it? You know, she's doing her due diligence to find out where the money came from, make sure it's not hot money that's being laundered.
It is. I actually mentioned this on Digital Spy during the week when this episode played out, and I was chit-chatting, and somebody said to me, "Well, the cash will be fine because it's been transferred via a lawyer." But there's, you know,
okay.
So that should be enough, apparently, to...
Unless it's the kind of lawyer that's on EastEnders, in which case, dodgy.
Absolutely. you and I have been here before, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, any lawyer in their own right mind would give better reassurances than, but I think that's why it got through the committee is what the comment was. You know, the committee is satisfied that a lawyer, it's come via a lawyer, so it must be kosher. However, in reality, this is a soap storyline. Like, there's poetic license in everything. I'm still sus, and I think Rue is right to investigate it. However, I do question whether these are Rue's motivations and whether it's not more personal.
Yes.
Under the guise of this could be dodgy, we need to make sure it's okay.
Yeah.
She does eventually call a truce with him later in the week when she sort of sits him down and she agrees to pay for cash out of her own money that she's obviously been saving for years with no job. That's Summer Bay magic money tree, Sophie. I need to get me one of them.
Shake the tree. Yeah, definitely.
And he agrees to not buy the swanky walkie-talkies, so we're all okay. We're not splurging the cash again. Another week down, we don't know the mystery. We don't know who the donor is. And
I think Cash does now, though, doesn't he?
I was about to say, there's this moment where John slaps a piece of paper on the thing. We don't know about it. Cash is making phone calls saying, you know, how much trouble you've caused. So yeah. John actually knows as well, but not saying anything.
It's weird because Cash answered the phone and he said something like, oh, you haven't called me for a while, or I haven't spoken to you for a while or something. I thought, who's this? And then he said, oh, do you know all the drama that you've caused, or all the trouble that you've caused, or whatever he said? And I thought, this is the donor. But then who is it if Cash doesn't normally talk to him on the phone? It can't be someone we know. I don't get it. Is it going to be massively underwhelming when we find out who it is next week or the week after or whatever?
We've put a lot into this storyline. It's going to be crap. Yeah, you're right. But it is someone Cash knows.
Yeah, so it can't be Banjo, and it can't be Gerald, and it can't be Simon Henderson, because he doesn't know any of those people.
Oh, yeah, and he called all, but he did call them all, didn't he, during the week as well?
Yeah. So it can't be anybody like that. It's got to be somebody that's on the show that Cash doesn't talk to very often. And in that case, I've got absolutely no idea who it is.
And it's all, but it's got to be someone who knows all the business, knows that it's 30k that's missing.
Yeah,
because that's been sort of thrown down our throats a few times. It's somebody who knew the exact amount. Remember this information.
Yeah, unless it is John, and he's just on screen when he's having those conversations with Cash, he's just playing it close to his chest and not saying anything. And then eventually he calls him and says, do you know what, Cash, it is actually me that donated the money. Is there any chance you can drop it? I just don't think that's true. Or unless it's Mr. Stewart ringing from Marimbula.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm lost. If it was meant to be a clue, I've missed it because I'm lost.
Yeah. And I couldn't even begin to guess. I mean, the names running through my mind are Martha. You know, somebody who has got links to the Bay and might know things, like Alf might have whinged to her. Do you know what I mean? Morag.
Oh yeah.
I don't see it.
I don't think Morag and Cash have ever met, though. They've never crossed paths as far as I know.
True. I couldn't even begin. But another week now. We don't know. They know. Hopefully we find out soon. I don't know whether is the reason we're all keeping it a secret because Rue's going to be hurt by it? I don't understand why it's a big secret now, especially if some know, unless, like you say, John.
Yeah. I think it can only be John or Alf now, to me, because I can't imagine it being anybody else that we know. But nobody cares that much to give 30k to the surf club, do they?
Well, that's true. It's got to be someone who's invested.
Unless is it Irene? Has Irene got that amount of cash lying around?
Well, she could do, couldn't she? And she's been the soundboard. Oh, you know, give it over, leave it.
Yeah, spend it. Forget it. Just get on with it. Just spend it.
Okay, that's the new favourite theory. Let's run with it. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be right, but she just popped into my head. I thought, who else would care about John and the surf club? And that's
does Dana have money?
She doesn't seem to. I don't know. I don't think she's got 30k kicking around, does she? She lives in Irene's spare room.
Mm.
I don't know whether there was some sort of, you know, payout or something from, you know, nearly being murdered by a cop or.
Oh yeah. Not that I've heard mention. Yeah.
Yeah, but it could be explained away like that, couldn't it?
Yeah.
One to watch. You know, I love a Community storyline, but it hasn't played out as
no.
Really, I must admit. I'll tell you what's happening in the Community as well soon, coming up. Have you heard Moonlight Assault, another event?
I am so lost on this storyline. I'm sorry, can you just explain this to me? So Flix asked Xander to do something to bring the young people in, right?
Because yeah, and all his ideas are crap.
And all his ideas are like trivia nights and knitting or whatever. I have no idea. Boring, anyway. So then he speaks to Dana and he's like, how do we get the young people in? And she says, well, what do young people come to bars for? And obviously, apart from drinking and what have you, she's like, to meet people, you know, single people meeting people. So I was like, this sounds like we're going to do like a sort of matchmaking type thing. Invite lots of single people to then, you know, as a mixer, kind of like get to know each other. And then what they ended up with was something that sounds very romantic that you would go to as a couple that you already, with someone you already know. I didn't really get where we went from bringing in people that needed to meet people to bringing people that have already got a plus one.
No, you're right. I was tweeting along to this episode on our Twitter account at Coastal News Pod. Basically, I was like, it's some sort of speed dating event or something. You know, like some sort of, you know, networking type.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like a mixer event where you turn up on your own. If you've got no one else to go anywhere with, you turn up on your own. You're not the only one on your own, and then you're not on your own for long because you get to meet people.
Yeah, but and then we're
having a romantic night out. It's not something that you'd rock up to as. I mean, some people might, but I wouldn't.
No. I can imagine the posters now, get laid, it's all, you know, like, that would get the crowd, the TikTokers in, wouldn't it? What's going to happen here is you're going to end up with
old people.
Yeah, Leah and Justin. And do you know?
I don't get it.
No, and literally all there was to the event when he was running it by Mac later in the week was the lights down and the candles up. I'm thinking, it took him 2 weeks to think of that.
I know. Who's it aimed at? That's what I'm confused about. Is this aimed at young? Is this what young people want? I mean, I'm not a young person, so I don't get it. But maybe they do want, you know, he was saying champagne and candles. And I was like, when I was young, I wouldn't have gone to that. My mum and dad would have gone to that, not me. It's just me. I'm so confused.
For me, it's just a device for them both to have a date on the tick. Because they're obviously growing folks around me and they just want to have a date and not have to pay for it.
He was looking at Flick last week, so he's fickle as anything, this guy.
He's in a bit of a dry spell, Sandra.
No, I've noticed.
So he's, I won't say, no, I'll stop myself. Yeah.
I stopped myself as well.
It's to do with that.
More
than anything, but it's not a good idea. I don't.
No.
It's going to be difficult, and then we've got this duo thing, you know. So we're going to have a song, acoustic set with Kirby and Theo, probably.
Yeah. I know the young people nowadays are not like what we were like, but I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of an 18 to 21 year old, and going to an acoustic love song, candlelit champagne night would have not been on my radar.
No. Nope. There's no other word than nope. I don't think 18, you know, I don't think the kids these days would, even if you're dating, like, you're off to the cinema or,
I really don't know. I'm not that
I'm
down.
Sounding really lame now. you know, they want loud music, they want alcopops. Is that just us?
Nowadays they want something, as one of them said, I think it was Dana, they want something Instagrammable. They want something that looks good, that they can, it's a lifestyle. You've got to sell them a lifestyle so that they can put it on TikTok or put it on Instagram or whatever. I don't think, I mean, the lifestyle that he's selling sounded very middle-aged to me. I don't know whether that's what they wanted. Did.
Well, do you remember the thing on the internet a few weeks back about this TikToker who did an episode of Home and Away? So I can only assume.
Yeah.
Linked. But why on earth should be interested in this? I mean, it's like you say, it's a stretch.
It is a stretch. Yeah, weird.
Yeah. Let's see, eh? Let's see if all the kids turn up. I've got this being Maz, Leah, Irene in one corner. Bree might call in after a shift in a
in a uniform. In
yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what other little story we need to watch and put on our radar happened as well. Harper on the old Instagram there.
Oh yeah, Tom.
Tom and a baby. Dumped him on the wedding day. That came out of nowhere.
Did, didn't it? Glad you said that. She's having like a bad day. And then Dana was like, oh, I know it's a bad day for you. And I was like, oh, why? What's the significance of the day? And then I was like, oh, it's the wedding. It was a wedding day. That's what I'm assuming. It's the anniversary of the day that she should have married this guy, but jilted him at the altar, chose her sister over him. That's where we're going with this, apparently.
Had to go on the run with Dana, full of drugs and what have you. Yeah.
Yeah, very weird. But
not over it.
Apparently this was a few years ago, you know, because he's moved on and had a baby since then, so it's got to be some time ago. But that came out of nowhere, like you say. And is this to explain how she's been with Tane? And, I mean, she's getting quite sort of flirty with a lot of the men in the bay, but not really going anywhere with it, you know. So is it more to explain that she wants a boyfriend, but actually she doesn't because she's still into this guy. She's still not over this ex or whatever. I don't know.
Well, we don't know anything, do we? Other than, like you say, what you've just said, you know, what she told us. It's dead funny that stuff like this insults, because we only learned it through a conversation between her and Dana, but Dana knows it all. In real life, you're not like you and I sat here talking about our, you know, we know each other.
Yeah.
Like, we won't then reiterate it all, won't we? Remember that time when I went to and I jilted.
That time when I jilted my fiance at the altar. Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Because you went on the run with me. Like you already know what she did because you were there. It's just something really funny soaps do, you know, because obviously we need to learn, we need to know what it is.
It's like it's like an insignificant event that they could have forgotten happened. It's not like you remember that time I went to that club and we spoke to that guy. Yeah, it's not like something like that. Like something, it's like, remember that day when I was supposed to get married and I planned an entire wedding and all the families were there and then I just didn't turn up? Oh yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah, remind me.
And then you go on to describe it in detail.
Oh, it's coming back to me now. I vaguely remember this happening. Yeah, I think I was there.
It's just silly, isn't it? What
mind you, if Dana was off her face on drugs, then she might not remember it at all. Who knows?
Yeah. Are we going to see this Tom guy? Like, I don't know. It just was complete left field, this, to me. And then that was it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, job gone. Well, yeah, sorry, Irene, I'm in a mood today. That's it. You're like, all right, okay. Like, is that it? Like, is there something coming? Like, you know?
It's got to be linked to this Xander event thing for single people that want to turn up to a romantic night, apparently. I don't get this at all.
Right. Yeah, lights down low.
Mm.
Yes, well, let's see. Where's Tom and baby? Let's see what happened there. Is he going to turn up at Moonlight, at Salt, whatever it's called?
I very much doubt it.
But he's not the right crowd if he does.
No.
We're after romantic 18-year-olds. But the rest of them, most of them are hormonal.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. I'm sorry. Oh, dear. It's just not where I expected it. From the earlier conversations in the week, it's not where I expected them to land with this romantic night. Same. It's just not. Same. Yeah.
Right. Justin is lurking about the diner this week. We've got to talk about this, and I've got some blooming opinions. Right.
Go on then.
He's open to bump into Leah, and Irene's sort of going, Dal, you know, what are you doing here? This is all a bit sad, which I was kind of laughing at.
That's the best line of the week. I wasn't even expecting it. I literally joked when she said it. I thought she was going to say something really like sympathetic, and she just went, "This is just sad."
And she did it in like a really condescending way. It's just a little bit sad. I was like, "Yes, Ivy." But so he leaves the diner in sort of agreement of how sad he's being, but ends up going up to SBH anyway, and banging on the front door, not the side door. You know, I did say on Twitter, like, that's your first mistake. No one touches that door. Mm. No one's home, so he just starts, I'll sit and wait for her. And obviously she comes home then with, you know, all the girls, Maz and Val. sound much older than they are.
Yeah.
You know, she's having a giggle. She's been out for lunch. She's had a good day. And then she sees Justin and it all comes crashing down. And give me strength. I want to just rattle her into her senses at this point. I don't want to sound insensitive, but it's going to happen because I'm annoyed. Right.
Tell me your thoughts.
Has been in the dark, right? He has had this dinner with her last week. He's, for him, nothing's changed. Like, he's still in the place where they were. Like, he's at, and everything's changed in his relationship, not by his choice, or he's had absolutely no say in it. Like, she checked herself into this place. She's come out and she's decided that she can't be at the house, and she's decided they can't see each other. She decided he can't ring or write a letter. She's decided everything. So of course he wants a bit of something from her. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know. I'm looking about online at the audience and everyone's sort of a bit 50-50 on this. You're either one or the other, which surprises me. And maybe I am part of that. Without, you know, maybe because I'm a bloke, I don't know, do I see it differently? But I'm like, I totally get where he's coming from. Would I do it in this way? Probably not. It's just a little bit sad, I should remember. But like, they're in this situation because of her, and it just seems to be like one word from Valerie and then she does it. And it's like, even Maz's, there was a bit of a weird flippant comment from Maz at the diner later in the week, you know, when she agrees to go back to work. Even Maz has noticed that anything Maz says doesn't work, but if Valerie says it, she jumps. Valerie's got some sort of control over her, or some sort of, you know, she's able to persuade her in ways that others aren't. And maybe it's because they've had a shared experience. I don't know. I'm absolutely fuming.
No, I love it. I'm fuming.
Do you see it the same, or are you a bit more empathetic?
No, not very empathetic, really. I'll be honest, I just don't really understand. I can't understand her mindset. I'm trying to put myself, as you would when you're watching this, you try and put yourself in their shoes, and you're trying to think, well, what would I do in that situation? And do I agree with how they're handling it or whatever? I can't even work out Leah's mindset. I don't understand what's wrong with her. I don't understand why she won't talk to him or see him, or I don't get it. And I don't even know how I feel about Valerie. I don't know whether I think she's a good person or a bad person at the moment. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel. The whole storyline is a bit off. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm my back's up a bit with Valerie now, because she seems to have some sort of with Leah that
she's
doing that sneaky
thing. So she's going off to see Justin behind her back and going, "No, don't give up," you know.
Yeah.
So literally saying the opposite of what Leah's saying. Leah's saying to her, "I can't be with him. I can't spend time with him. I don't trust myself around him," which I don't understand. I don't understand any of that. But she's telling Valerie that. And then Valerie's going off to see Justin and saying, "Oh, invite her around for dinner. Don't give up." And I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm trying to put myself in her shoes. And I'm like, if Leah was my friend and I was Valerie, what would I do? And I don't think I'd be sneaking around behind her back doing that.
Now, do you think that she set up that whole don't give up, invite him to dinner thing so that she could have dinner with Theo?
Oh, maybe.
So the four of them could go and then she could get to see Theo a bit. And because her and Theo look like they've struck up a bit of a friendship, haven't they? There's a bit of
And I'm suspicious of that as well.
Euphemism, but yeah, I
guess it's really. Oh, no.
Suspicious
dinner in a show. I'm suspicious of her generally, but I'm just like, you know, when she, you know, when they had that, Theo and Valerie went for that drink at Salt, and he was like, you know, why are we in the clinic? And she was like, oh, I'd rather not talk about it, but family death, blah, blah, blah. I'll save it all for therapy. And at that point, I was like, I think she's lying. I didn't believe her about the family death. And then obviously she opened up about her brother, and it was, she's blaming herself, isn't she? Like, there was a car accident and it's her fault because she was wasted. He came to pick her up from this party. She was being a bit of a tit, you know, when they're driving home, tried to open the door. He tried to stop her. They swerved and ended up upside down, and he's died. And now she's like, oh, I'm the black sheep of the family. I've ruined the family. I've killed my brother. Everyone hates me. I went to therapy. And there's just something that's not authentic about that story for me. And I don't know whether it's, maybe it's just me being suspicious, but I was like, I don't believe a word of this. I don't believe her. I don't know why.
I took that on face value, but now, if you don't believe it, I don't. I need to, you know, I trust you wholeheartedly.
No, so. I don't think you should. I don't know whether it's hard, because she didn't seem that upset when she was telling Theo. She wasn't crying. She just looked like, poor me. It was like a poor me routine. It wasn't like, oh, I feel sad for my brother. It was like, I feel sad for myself. I just didn't buy it. I didn't know whether it was a way to make Theo feel sorry for her, make Theo get feelings for her.
You think she's a right game player?
I don't know. I mean, if
that's not true, that's a pretty sick thing to do.
Well, it's a very soap storyline, isn't it?
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I probably am just overthinking it, but it just didn't seem authentic.
No, but I really like that now. I love that. Because I just was like, oh, yeah, that's really sad. And that explains why she was in the clinic so long.
Yeah. But yeah,
you're right. It was quite emotionless, wasn't it? And
it was. It was just like, yeah, he died. And like, it was a pity me routine. It wasn't unless that's just the way it's been written. And, you know.
Maybe, but my mind's going 10 to a dozen here now, because I'm thinking, right, well, that's how that could be how she's exerted that manipulation on Leah as well.
Whilst
they were sharing a room, they were in there for weeks together. Like, now I'm like, my mind's running wild. Like, can I only imagine what she's said to Leah? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Is she manipulating them all to make them feel a connection with her, like emotional connection with her? I don't know.
What a motive is, because she's not got, you remember we were saying, she's not gone to her own family yet.
No. Well I suppose
it sounds
the
like
motive,
they're estranged.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, well, if I didn't believe her, maybe she's just like a compulsive liar that just get like a drama attention seeking kind of person, which is a very soap thing. I mean, you get that on Hollyoaks, and had it on Corrie and EastEnders, I'm sure, as well. Like, you know, people just making up stuff to make people pay them attention. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, dear. Well, while all this goes on, yeah, food for thought. But while this is happening, Justin's walked Leah home and tries to plant a kiss on her, which I thought was a bit of a mistake, a genuine mistake. I thought he got a bit swept up, you know, a bit too soon for her. But obviously that spooks her. And she runs off and into the house. And it's Valerie again the next day that makes her, you know, you said you were going to take steps, so why don't you take one? You know, like, and suddenly she's doing it. She's meeting up with him again. And they go on this walk. We must have had 1,000 walk and talks on this show. And those scenes never get old. I love a bit of a walk and talk, sort some stuff out. And Justin's basically reciting Take That lyrics to her, you know. Whatever I said, whatever I did mean it. I want you back for good.
I want you back in my bed. It was very much, want you back in my life, want you back in my bed. Very 90s pop star it was.
It was, which he wishes he was. so then they have a real kiss. So, like, what Valerie does to Leah is make her do things that she's not able to do anymore, and I think that's a bit of a dangerous place we've ended up in with her.
I really do.
I think that's as great as it is that Leah and Justin seem to be going somewhere. It seems to only happen. And did you notice that scene that Maz looked a bit annoyed about it? Did you notice it as well? Did you pick up on it?
Yeah, because Irene says to her, well, it doesn't matter who talked around, as long as she's, you know, someone's talking around and it's working, it doesn't matter whether it's you or it's this Valerie or whoever. And Marilyn was like, yeah, I guess. And I thought, no, she's not buying that at all.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is weird. Obviously.
So is it Maz's intuition? Has Maz realised that there's something up with Valerie? Because, you know, Maz is normally quite a good sort of judge of character, isn't she? Is she getting a bad vibe off her that maybe other people aren't seeing yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe. And, you know, great. I hope so. I hope Maz brings her down a bit. Right, Sophie, it's time for your say on the bay, and this time we're shaking it up. No, you're not going to be telling me what Pauline's up to on Facebook this week. No, because we have with us a special guest, which we're really excited about. We have here Tamsin, fellow viewer and fan of Home and Away from the Pop Goes the Tam Tam podcast. Hello, Tamsin. Welcome to Coastal News.
Hello. Hello, thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very excited to join you guys.
Oh, it's very, very happy to have you here.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've been chit-chatting away on Instagram for weeks about Home and Away. It made sense. It made sense that we get you on and hash it out, I would say. So this is your say, okay? We're going to go through the current storylines and episodes that are happening. We want to hear your thoughts. You know, the guys who listen to this podcast are fed up of us and our thoughts. But before we do, do you want to tell us a bit about Pop Goes the Tam Tam and where people can find you?
Okay, so Pop Goes the Tam Tam is my, I would say, poorly named podcast. It's a pop culture podcast by someone called Townsend. That's me. We cover everything from Neighbours to Doctor Who and anything really that takes my fancy. It is completely 100% unscripted, and I'm joined by a selection of wonderful guests, including my amazing mum, who's turning 70 this weekend.
Happy birthday.
I'll pass that on to her. And yeah, it's just open to everybody, and you can find me on Spotify at Pop Goes the Tam Tam, and you can also find me on Instagram or wherever you get good podcasts. Join me on Instagram, it'd be great.
Yes, do so. I'm sure people will. Yes, I would listen to one of your, you were talking about the ship, you know, the ships. It was really interesting, the guest you had on as well, and then the power of ships and all that stuff, and something that as soap fans like we're very familiar with. So it's well worth checking out if you haven't done so already, of course. Thank you. Right, so your Home and Away story, Tamsin, what's your Home and Away story? Are you like a long time viewer? Are you sort of a dipper, because you're a Neighbours fan as well, aren't you, at heart?
Yeah. Well, I am of both churches. I'm of the Church of Neighbours and I'm of the Church of Home and Away. I joined the Church of Neighbours in the 90s, and I joined the Church of Home and Away a little bit later when it made the move to Channel 5, because it coincided. So it was 5:30. It was 5 to 5:30 for Neighbours and then 5:30 to 6 for Home and Away. So I could get my double bill of Australian sunshine. That is what we desperately need in this country. And so I joined with the Sutherlands and Kirsty and Kane, and I just followed it through.
That's a good era. We talk about that era a lot, don't we, Si?
Yeah, it's my favorite, to be fair. Like, ripping. You were talking, wasn't you, the other day about Noah, still feeling Noah's death.
I have to say, I was talking to Si about when Hayley used to be psychic.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I said you might remember, because I don't remember that.
Which Hayley? Was it blonde Hayley?
And she saw the ghost of her dad, and then obviously when, you know, Noah died. Can I spoil it? 20 years later. When Noah died, obviously, yeah, she saw his ghost. And I thought, because we were talking about when we used to be so far behind, and I know we're still quite far behind, but we used to get storylines in the past where everything had happened and we were like a year behind.
Yeah.
So when Noah died, I was totally shocked. I did not think that that was going to happen.
Oh,
and yeah, it was my favourite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a horrible. I mean, it was a great storyline, but it was a horrible shock for him to go in that way, wasn't it? Yeah.
They captured something with Hayley and Noah. They captured something, didn't they?
Yeah.
That was quite special, I think. And it was a shock because you didn't get spoilers that you do now back then.
Yeah.
I remember her seeing her dad as well at Flathead's book launch because she did the illustrations for the book, didn't she?
Yeah, I
do remember a bit, actually. She kept seeing him there, didn't she? Sort of guiding her.
I don't remember this at all. No, it's completely lost in my brain somewhere.
You know what we're gonna say, Sophie? Get your ass on YouTube.
Oh, I'm gonna have to now. So
you've been watching a long time then. So you know you've got a lot of history to draw on, which is fab. Because it's been we were saying the other day, you know, so you've came to the show sort of when it would move to Channel 5. It's been on Channel 5 25 years or so now. Why? Right. It was only on the other side, like 11. Like it's just mad. How many years have gone by, really? And what you remember?
But
couldn't tell you what happened this morning, like. But I remember Hayley seeing a ghost dad at a book launch 24 years later. This week, then. So we'll keep it current for now. Like, we've got a couple of sort of big things happening this week and stuff that we've, for the past hour, we've just been recording our main sort of episode discussion and we've had quite a lot of thoughts. And so it'd be nice to hear your thoughts as well. The story on everybody's lips, right? This blooming affair, got Mac and Levi. What's your initial thoughts? Like, where's your head at with all this?
Well, I think it's quite interesting, the affair, because I know that who we're told Mac is, and the series of relationship disasters that Mac has had, and also that she's had two heart attacks now. And I wonder how much of this is actually based on that he saved her life, and also she's kind of got to live for them, like she's very attracted to this man. He saved her life. And I don't think she's in the right headspace because she's not acting really how we know her to act. And because, you know, deep down, Mac does want a partner. She wants that. She wants, you know, a boyfriend or a husband to go along with all of the other things she's got, like salt, you know. And so her getting into a relationship that is another relationship that is doomed to fail is interesting. And I listened to your episode a couple of days ago when you were saying about the hate that Mac is getting compared to Levi. And I think, Sophie, you made a really interesting point where we actually don't know anything about Levi. And what we have seen so far has not been particularly great, I would say, you know. Even to this affair that he's now having, and when he turned the call off when Imogen called him his wife and he just like turned the phone off, and when he came in and he kind of shouted at everybody he knew best how to treat Remy and things like that, and his interactions with Xander, what we've seen so far is somebody who I would say is quite selfish, and he wants Mac and he's not going to pull back from that. So my sympathy in this is with Mac, and I also agree with you, Sophie, not to diss Si, but I do agree with you, Sophie, that he is the married one. He is the one who's breaking up a family. And also he's got an element of responsibility towards Mac, because he must know that this happens sometimes. Their patience, their feelings get increased and they think that they're in love with you, their infatuation grows because you've helped them so much. You've literally saved their life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he shouldn't have crossed that line, really.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think we talked about that on the main pod, actually, the fact that he's saved her. So does she feel indebted to him, or does she, you know, is she infatuated with him, like you say, like that whole, yeah, Florence Nightingale, I mean, effect, think, isn't it?
I think she's deeply attracted to him. I think she's been attracted to him from the go. And let's be honest, he has all the qualities that she has gone for in the past.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the go-getter, he takes no nonsense, he's the surgeon, he's a powerful man. Mac is drawn to powerful men.
So it
makes sense. But from his side of things, she got the wrong impression. She thought he was single. He should really have kind of shut that down.
Yeah. He never once said, oh, I'm married, or I've got, you know, I'm not available, or... He didn't say anything like that, did he? I mean, she kissed him in the hospital, and he had a perfect opportunity then to say, oh, actually, sorry, you got the wrong end of the stick, but I'm actually married. He didn't say a word, did he?
And it was really overstepping the boundaries, because at that point, she was still his patient. So there's all sorts of icky issues going on there.
Yeah, in his place of work as well. That's why I was loving it and also cringing, because it was like he's in the hospital kissing his patient. It's just a bit, but you also want to see it, don't you? Because it's a soap and you're like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, on the flip side, it is interesting to get this sort of storyline, because I don't think we've had an affair storyline for a long time. And I don't think we've had an affair storyline where our main view into the affair is a character that we kind of already like.
Yes.
He's doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting writing as well.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Because Mac, we love Mac, like, and she's very, very popular. And you're rooting for her to be happy, like you say, because she's on this cycle of men and it all goes wrong and heartbreak again. And, you know, she's on that constantly. You want it to work. And I think I described it as sort of, I was watching it through my fingers, you know, because you're doomed to fail is a perfect summary, really. And you're right, it's because we're in that Max lens, aren't we? We've got a bigger, deeper rooting of her, of, you know, wanting her to be happy.
Yeah. Is that why we're more critical of her as well? So the fans are sort of more critical of Mac and her involvement with this than they are with Levi. And as you've just said, the stuff that we've seen of Levi, actually, we should be questioning him, because he has got aggro at people. He has shoved Xander across the room. You know, he's snapped at people. The whole backstory with his dad, you know, sounds a bit iffy. Why are we giving him more slack than we're giving Mac? I don't really quite understand that.
It's interesting you should mention the dad, because I don't think Eden's ever mentioned this, but the way Eden reacted, I did wonder if there was violence between spousal abuse, and that is why they divorced, and also, you know, Eden went with her mum and Levi maybe sided with the dad, and maybe that's what the issue was.
Yeah, we've not really had much of an explanation. The thing I find really odd, and I've mentioned it a couple of times with Si, is that the obviously their mother has been in contact with Levi the whole time, because he knew about the band, he knew about the album, because his mum told him. So I'm like, why is his mum in contact with him? Because she's not holding this grudge against him and his dad. But Eden is, and that's what I didn't understand. At first, I was kind of sympathising with Eden. I was thinking, well, you know, her loyalty to her mum, blind loyalty, she's just going along with it because her mum's not happy with the dad and blah, blah, blah. You know, you took your side and what have you. But then when I found out the mum doesn't really have any beef with Levi, I was like, I don't really understand why Eden does then. Why is she taking it much harder than the mum, who's actually been the person that's been wronged? And I was thinking the same thing, you know, is there anything else that we haven't been told? Is there something else that was involved with the dad? You know, was he abusive towards Eden?
Well, as the viewer, we're trying to find reason for her reaction, aren't we? You know,
it seems over the top. He seems like, well, if your mum's okay with it, why aren't you? I don't get it. Very odd. I don't know whether we'll ever get an answer for that, whether it's just, you know, one of those things where, I don't know, it doesn't quite sort of stitch up the story.
I wonder if the answer is actually going to come in that, because in the preview, they showed him trying to keep everything hush-hush between him and Mac in the hotel room.
Yes.
Could it even have been his parents got divorced because his dad had an affair, and so Eden looks really down on that, and they're kind of in that situation when they're getting back together as brother and sister, and he'll have to A, ask her to lie to Imogen, and B, like, if they ever meet, she'll have to lie, and also it's probably quite triggering for her if this is how the parents' marriage ended. So it's going to put them on the rocks again.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I think if Eden ends up in a position where she's having to, like you say, lie and commit the same sort of secrecy, commit to that secrecy that broke her family up as a child and really, you know, really deeply hurt her, as we're to believe, she's going to have a lot to sort of battle with herself and her morality when it comes to that. And she might actually gain a bit of understanding of Levi on the journey. I think what will be interesting is because Mac is also a product of a similar marriage. She had a similar upbringing. The dad ran off and he was a bit of a wrong. And so at what point are we going to see Mac think, you know, right, there's something Freudian going on is what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
You know,
it's weird, isn't it? They're literally repeating the same sort of pattern as their fathers, but then Mac doesn't like her dad, but Levi obviously does, you know, he sided with his dad. So Mac's, you know, taking a hard line, almost the same as Eden, really, with her own father and what he's done to her mum, whereas Levi's on the other side, isn't he? So it's interesting. I'm waiting for Mac to have more of a crisis about this. She doesn't seem to really, apart from when the phone rings and she sees Imogen's name, she doesn't really seem to be that guilty or that worried about it, which doesn't really feel like it's her. That's, you know, it's not the Mac that we know, as we were saying it earlier, but I just don't know where we're going with this. I was saying to Si earlier, I can't see this lasting and being a happy ending here. But then I also find it interesting that Levi isn't like a random character that's come to town because we need a heart surgeon. And he's just a random throwaway character that will get on screen for 2 weeks and then we'll never hear of him again. He's Eden's brother and Eden's integrated into the Bay now. You know, she's with Cash, and obviously Cash has got family here, he's got Flick here. So Levi now, even though he is a random character, he's not like a permanent character as far as I know, he's now got these links to the Bay through Eden. So if this all goes tits up, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he can't just ride off into the sunset because we've still got the fallout of Eden being in the Bay.
It does feel, though, that he is being set up to actually join.
Do you think that's what we're gonna end up with?
And I do think, I mean, we know the rules of Home and Away is once a name is uttered, we will have a character turn up that is that person. So I think it's only a matter of time before we actually meet Imogen. Her name has been uttered now what, 4 or 5 times? I wonder if they're actually maybe gonna move to the Bay.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
I've just got a bit sick. Then.
I know, my stomach's just gone. Oh, gosh.
I'm looking forward to meeting Imogen because I want to find out how happy this marriage is, I must say.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see the dynamic.
What's true and what's not.
And it'll be interesting to see if they've got any kids. Because they do.
Oh, dear. Yeah, he hasn't mentioned that, has he? She didn't even ask him, did she? She hasn't even asked him. You know, she found out he was married, but she didn't ask him any other questions, like, how long have you been married? She said, is it happy? And he said, yeah, she's lovely, you know, I'm happily married, which is just, I don't believe, anyway. But
okay, get your kecks off.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm really happy, let's have sex. It's really weird. But then, you know, not to follow up with, well, how long have you been married and have you got kids and... You'd ask more questions, wouldn't you? I said, well, I would.
I wonder if that's the big shock twist. If they've got kids, because they're all kids that have been messed up by this.
Yes.
All of them. Yeah. Eden, Mac, Levi. I wonder if that's the sort of realisation that Mac gets. Like, you know.
Because then she's going to feel really awful, because then she, you know, it is breaking up a family, and she is very aware of that impact on the kids, because she was one. So, is
prediction.
That the reason why, is that
prediction.
The reason why we've not heard it? Because.
Yeah. Write that in biro.
Yeah.
That we
thought, putting it in the book, right?
We'll credit Tamsin for it.
The line that sort of gave it away for me was, and this could be wrong, this could be a red herring, because he said, are you having lunch with the girls? And I think you're meant to think, oh, she's out with her girlfriends.
Oh, but what if? It could be two little girls. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yes. You're right. That could be read in several ways, couldn't it? Yeah.
Good grief.
Oh no.
You've come on and messed everything up.
Got me thinking now. Oh wow.
She's not gonna sleep till Tuesday.
No, I'm not. I'm not thinking about it.
So if we move on now, because the other sort of big story arc that we've got at the moment is and I'm really interested in your thoughts because we've just gone off on one. Is the whole Valerie arriving, Justin and Leah, and this whole weird Leah recovery thing happening. We're struggling to feel apathetic towards Leah. And it's quite easy to do. Leah's a bit Marmite, but nothing new about that. In the fandom for years, since Leah's arrival, she's invoked quite a strong response from the fans. Where do you sit with sort of Leah and Justin and that whole not coming together, coming together, Valerie sticking her oar in situation?
Okay, so I'm going to separate this into a couple of different parts. Firstly, the question I want to ask is, when they said Valerie, did you not think maybe it would be someone's Leah's age? Because I've never met anyone with Valerie that wasn't in their 50s.
That's true. That is true. And she's too old to be named after the Zootons song as well, isn't she? Because that came out when she was already alive, I'd imagine. I don't know how old she is, but I'm assuming she's older than the song. So I don't know. I don't know where that's come from. You're right. You were expecting Val, you know, from the bingo.
Yeah. Blue rinse. Yeah.
So the second part of that is I want to say that I'm actually a Leah fan. I like Leah.
I do.
And if you had had Leah's chaotic, sort of terrible life that she has lived, where if you marry Leah, you will die. That's the fact. You will die. Maybe it's usually off screen, but your life expectancy is under 3 years. And I wonder if Leah's just actually accepted that she loves Justin and they cannot be together, because if they are together, he will die.
Oh, so she's saving him. Okay.
But practically, I actually think the writers have fallen into a trap that a lot of writers fall into, where writing a stable relationship, I mean, we're lucky to have all either had stable relationships or be in stable relationships. And, you know, the day to day of that is quite boring. That's not what you really want to see in a soap. You want drama. You want high stuff going on. You want cheating. You want miscommunication.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about Leah and Justin was that they were kind of a fixed point in a crazy universe. Like, it was always everybody else's problems and they had to deal with them. But the core of their relationship was quite strong.
Yes.
And I think a lot of writers come into soaps and come into series and go, well, that's quite a boring couple to write, because they're happy. They're actually happy with each other. They don't have these problems. They just deal with them for other people.
Yeah.
And I think a lot, you get this in Neighbours quite a bit, where you pull the relationship apart and you put up these artificial barriers as to why they can't be together. Because the truth is, the writers just can't write happy relationships. They're worried that it's going to be boring. But in something like Home and Away, you actually do have a number of stable relationships at the moment. You've got Eden and Cash. You've got Rose and Marley. You've got a number of couples that are kind of just okay. And then you've got Bobby and Tane. And you've got some burgeoning ones. And I guess they were worried that if they added, you know, if Lee and Justin continued to be as solid as they were, it was just going to be another sort of couple that wasn't really going anywhere. But yeah. I think that's a mistake, because you do need those a solid couple in the heart of all these soap operas, that they are just together. You know, drama is around them, not them.
Yeah. Yes. You know. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you need that stability, don't you? And you need that couple to be like the sort of the benchmark for other people to be sort of measured against as well, don't you? Like, because we do that a lot. We compare couples, you know, especially like the younger ones. Yeah. You know, in terms of chemistry, we talk about Tani and Flick having loads of chemistry, whereas for us, Rose and Marley don't seem to have any, and we're constantly comparing them. So you're right, you do kind of compare them. So we have compared people to Justin and Leah before and said, well, look at them, they're stable, they've got their shit together, you know, they're not falling apart. And now, well, what you say,
she pulled a knife on him.
Well, this was before that, but yeah, why have they suddenly decided to pick them apart and take that rug away from, because it's like it's almost like it shook us, isn't it? Because they took that rug away from under us. We were quite comfortable with them being the stable couple on the show, and we knew what we were getting from them, and now they've kind of taken that security blanket off us, and we're like, we don't know what's going on now, like this is like turmoil. But is it more...
they had to do something, because we can't have Leah have yet another kidnapping that doesn't seem to phase her. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah
so true. I applaud the fact that, you know, we're now seeing the fallout from that whole cult kidnap thing at the season end. Because I think, although it's just become a bit of a running joke, hasn't it? Oh, Leah's been kidnapped again. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to do it, you know, and she's got to imagine cars coming towards her and all that rubbish. And then and now I'm like, I'm turning away from it, because I feel like, maybe it's like I said earlier, is it because I'm a bloke? I'm like, the poor guy's been in the dark. She's called all the shots. She's one that said, you know, you're not to ring me, you're not to write to me, I'm not coming home to you, I'm going to stay here. Like, for him, nothing's changed. Like, he's, they had, you know, he had this amazing life, this, you know, this amazing partner, a steady life. He was quite happy and content with it. And he's had no say or control in any of what's happening right now. It's all Leah.
So I suppose from that viewpoint, they're both suffering the fallout from this kidnapping then, because he's lost all his agency, similar to how they like Leah felt, if that makes sense. They're both kind of going through it, but in different ways. He's being shut out by her, and she's got the, you know, post-traumatic stress from, you know, having happened the 500th time to her. At this point, she must be better at kidnapping. She must be able to instruct them, like, no, you'll need to do it tighter, because I can wriggle out of that. With her rope and gag set, you know.
Yeah,
definitely.
You know.
She'll definitely never miss a ladder again.
No.
Like...
Oh my god, I can't get over that ladder, but yeah.
On the next kidnapping, like, just check there's not a ladder in the corner.
Just look around the bloody room.
Yeah, before we stay here for 3 days. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's been done because drama, for drama's sake, by the sounds of it.
And I suppose from an actor's point of view, you want a more interesting storyline than just going to work, don't you?
Yeah,
just going to work in the diner and making a sandwich. You probably do want something a bit more interesting as well. You don't want to be doing just the stable couple thing all the time, I guess.
And when was the last time Irene had a decent storyline?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know. Well, I guess she was involved in the Harper thing, so I guess that was recent, wasn't it? The Harper Dana storyline. She got swept up in that. But she hasn't had one where she's been the main character, I don't think, for a while. Yeah.
I think we've got thrown on for decades now for Irene.
Yeah. Yes.
And so, lastly, there's one last sort of topic I wanted to get your thoughts on, if that's okay with you, Tamsin, and you, Sophie. And that is the whole, another Marmite character, I would say, is the whole Rue saving the surf club. Because I've been begging for some sort of community saviour type storyline for ages, haven't I, Sophie? And I was like, when this came up, I was like rubbing my hands together, like, yes, come on, the surf club's in peril, everyone's going to rally, and we're going to save it, and we're going to, you know, but actually, it's not gone that way. And in that respect, I'm a little bit deflated, but I'm quite excited that Rue's got a reason to get out of bed in the morning. What do you reckon?
I agree. They don't do anything with Rue at all. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think the best time that Rue actually worked was when she was a foster carer for Maddie and that whole group of kids.
Yeah.
I think worked really well for her character. And I mean, you get the sense with Rue that there's a bit of arrested development, isn't there? Because she never feels like an adult, even though she is one, and she always seems to be chasing behind Mr. Stewart, and she doesn't really have her own thing. Like, she's still living with her dad, which, look, there's my mum moved in with me during lockdown because we were both vulnerable, so I'm not calling any shade on anyone like that who is in that situation. But I just think for Rue, she's always talking about how she wants to do her own thing. She wants to be independent, but then she doesn't back that up with anything. And I also think, you know, going back to that storyline with Marilyn and her daughter and how mean Rue was to Marilyn, I just could not forgive her, actually.
No.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, that there's no going back from that story, actually, for a lot of viewers. Even though, because Rue felt hard done by, and I think we were supposed to try and side with that towards the end of it. You know, she was the one left with the long lasting results, but just the way she behaved and the way she was towards the problem is Marilyn is untouchable, you know, like for us. So you can't, you den, you know, and she's made the mistake of going there with a character like Marilyn. There is no redemption, really, that I can see.
Not
even saving the surf club.
No. Nothing as iconic as that, I don't think, can bring her back. There's still lots of people on, even though she's got more of a, you know, a storyline at the moment, there's still lots of people on social media still saying they can't stand her and what's the point of her, and you know, they don't forgive it. I mean, last year when that Heather storyline was playing out, I was reading comment after comment about Rue and how nasty she was and how everyone had just, you know, they weren't particularly fond of her up until that point because they found her a bit of a pointless character, but then they hated her. Everybody was saying it, you know, they hated her just because of the fact that she'd done that to Marilyn, and she was basically gaslighting her, wasn't she? So
What would you do if you had the, you know, you've got the brief, you're in the writer's room, what would you two do with Rue at this point?
You know what I would do, so I'm not going to answer that.
I would try to give her some storyline that doesn't revolve the surf club or anything to do with her father. I would definitely put her back. I mean, I think it would be a way of getting some fresh blood back into the bay again. I mean, something, because we spoke about this on Instagram and we talked about how, you know, one of the key factors to Home and Away is that foster element, and we talked about how, you know, a lot of the characters on it now are adults who've been fostered, which I think is really interesting because, you know, as an adult there's a whole sort of psychology that would go along with that, but I do think putting her back as the foster carer, giving her a storyline where these decisions she has to make are really important. It would plug into her maternal stuff, the things that she didn't do with Martha. And just give her a bit more agency. Stop her hanging forever around Mr. Stewart. Because at this point, let's be honest, there's going to come a time when Alfie's not around anymore. It's sad. I don't even want to think about it. But it is a reality. And it feels like Rue should be taking more agency and kind of stepping in to where Alf was, to becoming that kind of... Because Alf is really the grandfather of the bay. Yes. And she could easily be the mother of the bay if she wanted it. If she, you know, and that's kind of like the person that people come to and the person who will give you the truth, even if you don't want to hear it. This is the truth, you know. And to have seen Rue go full circle from where she was like a tearaway teen to being the voice of the bay. Because I was always struck by, I always really loved the scenes going back into the history when it was Alf and Brax. And it was kind of the old bay and the new bay coming together. And when Alf would stand up for Brax, then he'd be like, no, they are part of this community. And I loved that. And I could love to see Rue take on that role, find someone like that and defend them and be like, no, they are part of this community, but do it in her own way, not copy her father, but do it in her own way. But she needs to find her voice. And the writers need to get her out of this subplot. I mean, let's be honest, Alf either gave that money or John gave that money. And John is acting like he gave that money.
Yes. I think our latest theory is Irene now, isn't it? Because we were like, well, who else could it be? If it's not John or Alf, it's got to be Irene. Because there's a limit to how many people this can actually be, this donor. There's, you know, the exact amount of money, etc. So yeah, you're right.
But you saw when Rue was speaking to Rose and saying, I want you to investigate this, and it was like Rose was in the right. She was in the right. This is not a police thing. You get done for wasting police time in this country.
You know? You would, definitely.
But you know, she comes across as being so self-centered and selfish, and we kind of need to drag her away from that, and we need to sort of reposition her at the heart of something. They had that storyline when Marilyn and Rue were sort of volunteering, weren't they? And I thought that was going to become more than it did, and they just kind of essentially dropped it. I think that's where Rue kind of where she needs to be repositioned.
Yeah,
and actually that would be a really good opportunity to shoe on the old dropping centre back in.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we were getting excited about that when the soup kitchen thing briefly happened. We were like, that this could be a great, like, and it would bring a load of waves and strafes through, you know. You know, like it'd be a device for that, wouldn't it? You know. You're right. Get her out of Alf's shadow and give her a purpose is what I'm hearing.
And like you say, if we brought the drop-in centre back, it would be a good way to try out characters to see if the audience respond to them, and then maybe bring them on as a guest or as part of the main ensemble.
You could have a whole range of people, couldn't you? Like a mix of ages, mix of backgrounds. It could be anybody, couldn't it? That it could be someone really old, someone really young. It could be literally anybody could be turning up and needing some help in some way, couldn't they?
And I mean, if you wanted the clash between Rue and John, that's where you could have it. Because you know, John is kind of, he's a not in my backyard type guy, you know? So the clash would come there, I think.
Yeah,
you're right, absolutely. Right, get it done, people. Get it done. We want to see it. Oh, dear. Sophie would just have Rue shot and then dumped in the sink.
I'd just kill her off, I'm sorry.
And I mean, that's another option.
She would just get eaten by a shark if it was me, I'm sorry. We've not had that for a while, so that'd be my vote.
And we haven't had that in like since the 80s of the shark attack.
No, there was a couple of things way back when in the late 80s, early 90s, but I don't think we've had any sharks since then. Bring back the shark.
That's a character you miss.
Yes.
Oh dear. Well, thank you so. This has been fun. Thanks very much for coming along. It's been great sharing your ideas.
I've had a wonderful time. Thank you for letting me join you. I absolutely love your podcast, and I can't wait to host you on mine. Hold me in your arms. Don't let